Well, on behalf of Yahweh's Restoration Ministry, we welcome you all to the Feast of Tabernacles 2016. It's a great time. Everybody who has an understanding of Yahweh seems to look forward to this feast more than anything else that we do. And you know, it's a time when we rejoice before Him, and I want to emphasize that in this message, to rejoice and return. You know, there are those here who have never kept a feast. There are those here who have never kept a feast with us, and there are those who have kept the feast with brethren many, many, many years. So we are indeed a special family, a family of Almighty Yahweh, one that's going to translate into a literal family one day into the kingdom. You know, after months of planning and preparation, it's time to rejoice. As a matter of fact, if you read Leviticus 23:40, we are commanded to rejoice. He says, "You shall take you on the first day of the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before Yahweh your Elohim 7 days." Why should we rejoice? Because this feast is telling us there is salvation coming. There is a kingdom coming, and we can have a part in that. What greater reason to rejoice than that? Here's a little survey for you. I'm at the Feast of Tabernacles because, A, it's the coolest thing in New Testament worship. B, I love the wilderness. C, Tabernacles can teach me more about Almighty Yahweh. And D, keeping tabernacles is a command as binding as the Ten Commandments. What's your choice? My choice is all four. You know, as in every facet of a believer's devotion, motives for what we do are everything. Everything that we do is because of why we do it. The right reasons lead to right worship. And we're here to please Yahweh. And we'll be blessed because of it. He promises that. Zechariah chapter 14 is a synopsis of events just before Yahshua returns to this earth. We're not talking about ancient Israelite history here, as many would have you believe. We're talking about the future just ahead of us. Verse 16, "It shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all nations which came against Jerusalem even shall go up from year to year to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, and keep his Feast of Tabernacles." Wow. This is future. "And it shall be that whosoever will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain." You ever thought about rain as an affirmation from Yahweh? We sure got it in the last couple days, haven't we? An affirmation. Because when you don't do it, you get no rain. When you do it, here's rain. Think about it. "Well, that just means Jews," some will say. So you reply to your friend, "You mean that the Jews are going to attack Jerusalem?" I don't think so. It says all families of the earth will come up to keep the feast. So let's continue. "And if the family of Egypt, these aren't Jews, go not up and come not that have no rain, there shall be the plague wherewith Yahweh will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all nations that don't come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." You know, the Feast of Tabernacles is pretty important. It's the one he mentions specifically out of all seven. That if you don't keep it, you're going to be plagued. And it's the feast where all the nations are going to come to Jerusalem to worship Yahweh. Out of all the cataclysmic events that are going to precede Yahshua's return to conquer the nations, alter the earth, and set up Yahweh's throne on earth, Yahweh cites this observance. They will, by force, keep the Feast of Tabernacles. We have a choice now. You have a choice. You didn't have to come here. You came because Yahweh called you to come here, and you were obedient to the call. And in that are wonderful blessings. Why Tabernacles? Why not Purim? Why not Hanukkah? Because Yahweh says so. That's why he says so. Everyone who refuses to comply then, you got a choice now, then you won't have a choice. You will suffer the consequences. Millions upon millions will be doing just what you're doing now. Think about that. You're on the cutting edge, blazing trails. Many come to the truth through the Sabbath and the feasts. And the name. But oftentimes, it's the feasts that draw people. Did you notice that the word, whenever Yahweh's people turn back to him, it's oftentimes through the feasts? As when Israel was told to come out of the false worship of Egypt to keep a feast, Feast of Unleavened Bread. As when Judah returned to true worship when they came out of Babylon, and Ezra, Nehemiah, and they rebuilt the temple, they came and worshiped Yahweh at the Feast of Trumpets. They listened to the law, and they were so eager to hear it. Everyone stood up, and they stood up half a day listening to the law being read and expounded upon during a feast, Feast of Trumpets. They were coming back into worship again, right worship, through a feast. As when the Corinthian assembly, that crazy assembly that had all these weird problems, 1 Corinthians 5, probably written during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, when Paul says, don't allow that blatant sin in the assembly. Knock that guy out of there, and maybe he'll return to his senses and come back. But at this time, get him out of here. And then he says, therefore, let us keep the feast. See? Cleanse from sin. Keep the feast. Come out of the world. Keep the feast. As when in the millennial kingdom, we see tabernacles enjoined for the whole world to come back to true worship through a feast. Feasts and feast mentioned 34 times in the New Testament. When did you hear that growing up? I didn't hear one thing about any feast in all the training I had out in the church. Not once did I hear anything about a feast. And if it was, is somebody questioning why it's there and we don't hear about it? Then you hear about it. Oh, you don't have to worry about that. That's for the Jews. That's for Israel. That's Old Testament. Don't worry about it. Well, I just read where it is important in this day and in the day to come. First and foremost, you're here to worship Yahweh and serve him and learn about him. And we pray this observance will be filled, just chock full, of unforgettable joy, knowledge, understanding for you and your family. And you will get out of it what you put into it. We say that every year, but it's so true. You serve, you're going to get a lot more out of it. You come with the right attitude, you're going to get more out of it. You come with a smile. Did you know that your mind reacts to your body in certain aspects? You can actually change your attitude just by smiling. Your brain reacts to that. Lots of smiles out there this feast. Regular, consistent feast observance is critical to spiritual health as well. We've noticed over many decades problems with families and kids. Parents who are inconsistent in their worship, inconsistent in keeping the Sabbath and feast days. Children typically lack the spiritual stability that comes with making connections they need with brethren and others they see regularly. Lacking that grounding, many, when they become emancipated, they bolt. They don't want any more to do with religion. They hadn't had a grounding. You have to have a grounding, and they get that grounding from their parents and how they worship. That's how they learn. What is the number one reason most people don't serve Yahweh today? Number one reason is number one. Because of number one, because of the idolatrous me, self comes before everything else for most people today in this world. Self-absorbed, self-indulgent, self-centered, self-interested, self-promoting, self-satisfying culture. That's what we're in. Yahweh is down there somewhere like 9 or 10 maybe. Maybe worse today. He rises to the top when there's a crisis. Then now he's important. Now we better pray, you know. Your thoughts and prayers. You hear that often when there's a crisis or somebody has a problem. We'll keep you in thoughts and prayers. Otherwise, we don't keep you in prayers. We don't care, it seems. For the vast majority of this world Yahweh and his ordained worship are increasingly irrelevant. Yahshua asked a prophetic question in Luke 18:8. He says, "Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith, or possibly the faith, on the earth?" I kind of think it's faith, because I see it, you know, nowhere hardly anymore that people really want to get serious. A Newsweek BeliefNet poll showed that a shocking number of people who call themselves evangelical and born again think that exclusive obedience to Yahweh is insignificant. The question of the poll asked, can a person or a good person who isn't of your religious faith attain salvation? The results of more than 1,000 adults, 18 and older, revealed 68% of evangelical Christians believe good people of other faiths can also be saved. Nationally, 79% of those surveyed said the same thing, with an astounding 91% agreement among Roman Catholics. Someone of another faith. I remember when I was working for the legislature, they had, of course, they always open their meetings with prayer. I don't know how much longer that's going to go, but they had this one minister there, and he invokes G-O-D, Allah, Buddha, whatever your faith is, whatever it is, bless this. What? Where's the discretion? Where's the truth? You call on other deities? Just trying to be inclusive, you know? Get everybody feeling good because he mentioned their deity. Not that it was going to do much good. Evangelicals are among the most church-going and religiously attentive people in the United States, one writer wrote. But how could so many of them toss aside such a central biblical teaching as you worship and serve only Yahweh? Don't they get it? This is what the Bible teaches. From Genesis through the end of Revelation, it's what the Bible teaches. You serve only Yahweh, not any other mighty one. But you see, when you use a generic term for him, you're already sliding that direction. When you use his name, you're calling out a specific mighty one with specific commands, with specific ideals, with specific people. See, that brings you closer into his sphere when you call on his name. You call on a generic category title, G-O-D, it's wide open. It's the Wild Wild West. The first commandment encompasses all the others. Everything in the Bible rests on the first commandment. I am Yahweh, your Elohim, no other mighty ones before me. Ephesians 4 says there is one body, one spirit. One body, one spirit, as you are called in one hope of your calling, one master, one faith, and one baptism. One El and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. Well, if you're of the truth, he is. So now we see the maturing of the political correct generation and their wholehearted acceptance of diversity, which means accept everything that even, you know, even if it's apostate, they're getting there just on a different route. Accept, accept, accept. Well, the Bible says divide, divide, divide. Turn from the world. Turn from your sin. Turn from the evil ways. Don't embrace it. Come out and be separate. And touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, Yahweh says. Proverbs 14:12, there is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. You know, an astute scholar, I've been listening to information about the start of the of Christianity in the New Testament. He made an important point, I think. He says the Roman Church took the view as they start with man and they argue up to Yahweh. The Reformation started with Yahweh and argued back down to man. And that flavors the whole doctrinal teachings of it. You start with man, you can build up your own doctrine. You start with Yahweh, you follow his prescription. You see, for man. The second approach sees the Bible as preeminent, and man changing his life and worship to comply with it. That's what we're trying to do. If you start with Yahweh, everything else falls into place. You know, it all flows from him. And that is the key to the scriptures. We obey him as he's commanded us. Well, I think we're clearly in the throes of the great falling away, which will only accelerate in the years ahead as we see the drumbeat of other faiths coming in, Islam and secular influences, and getting louder and louder. And I wonder how durable the faith of many is going to be, especially when they're running from pillar to post. We observe the feasts because they are critically binding by Yahweh. They're just as binding as the weekly Sabbath. I always tell people, you know, well, especially Sabbath keepers that don't understand the feast or don't keep the feast. So we'll look at Leviticus 23. It introduces, all right, let's just read it. 23:1, I don't have the slide. I get too confused when I use the clicker, so I don't even use it. I should, but anyway. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, I'm in Leviticus 23:1, and say unto them, concerning the feasts of Yahweh, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. And then what's the next verse? Verse 3, 6 days shall you work and be, shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest, a holy convocation, you shall do no work. So he's introducing the feast, and he starts off with the weekly Sabbath. You tell me they aren't tied together. You tell me one isn't just as important as the other. Feasts of Yahweh starts with the weekly Sabbath. Think about it. You know, the feast or the Sabbath is a weekly feast, and that we keep a feast kept weekly, and the feasts themselves are Sabbaths that we keep yearly, annually. Some basic, in each, we find cessation from work, we don't work, worshiping with others in both, learning his word in both, offering of sacrifices to Yahweh in one way or another in both. They meld. One is as important as the other. If you're going to keep the Sabbath and not keep the feasts, you got half a faith. And what stands out, and I've noticed, is the number 7. I don't know if you ever considered the number 7 and how sacred it is in Yahweh's calendar. It dominates the cycle of religious worship. It dominates the cycle of his observances, starting with the weekly seventh day. Every seventh day is a Sabbath. Every seventh month is an especially sacred month with 4 feasts in it, the most of all months. Every seventh year is a sabbatical year. And by the way, we just ended it with atonement. You can now work on getting your garden ready for next year. The Feast of Unleavened Bread begins on the 14th. That's 2 sevens. And it lasts for 7 days. The Feast of Weeks follows 7 times 7 days from Unleavened Bread. The Feast of Tabernacles begins 14 days, 2 sevens, after the beginning of the month, and lasts 7 days. And then we have another feast, Last Great Day. The feasts, like the weekly Sabbath itself, give a spiritual renewal that we all need. It's been a long dry spell for many of you from, you know, the Feast of Weeks of Pentecost up until Feast of Trumpets. Several months there where you haven't had a chance to fellowship with the brethren. I know you're remote, you're out there in Schenectady, New York or whatever, you know, and biggest question we have is, you got a group I can meet with? Not yet, we're working on it, but not yet. You know, it's very important for people to have regular fellowship, regular communication with others. That builds your strength spiritually, and you need it. You need it. The best that we can do for many is, of course, the electronic media, the website, the live service, and all of that. But the question we need to ask at this feast is, how really dedicated are we? Yes, we've come out. We've kept Yahweh's command to come out and keep this feast. That's big. That's big. If everybody was dedicated, we would not have a room for everybody anywhere to keep everybody observing the feast as we are commanded to convocate. It's a question we have to ask ourselves continually. Do we really have what it takes to be Yahshua's bride? Do we hold back? Or do we give him our all? You know, every year we hear the same story from several different people each year. Here's a scenario. You left your child at home alone. Something catastrophic has happened so that his or her survival is now in the balance. There's no time to waste, but you're 50 miles away. Do you say, well, I would sure like to be there, but I don't have enough gas for my car. I'm unsure whether my car will even make it. I need new tires. Or I'll do everything humanly possible to get to my child as fast as I can. Even if I must borrow some money, borrow a car, hitch a ride, anything I can do, I will, to be there. It's that important. No matter what it takes, no time to waste. Translation is, the feast is coming. You know the truth. You know that your salvation is in the balance because you want to obey Yahweh. You've been called. It's in play now. So you know you're to be there as Yahweh commands, as he ordained. And you've known that for an entire year. Do you focus on the can'ts, the obstacles, or do you use every means possible to be at his feast, to attend? Even if it means borrowing some money to fix the car, to buy some gas, or to hitch a ride, or rent a car, or buy a plane ticket, or bus or train ticket, or any way to be there. Let's face it, most battles that we face in this life are inertia inspired. Inertia is a tendency for an object to remain at rest if it's at rest, and to remain in motion if it's already in motion. It's the rest part that's the problem. We're in motion. Yahweh's people are in motion. They're ready to go and do whatever he commands. We learned far more than the average person about Yahweh. Abraham was in motion when called out of Ur of the Chaldees. Hebrews 11:9 says, by faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. The same promise. For he looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is Yahweh. We're looking for the same city ourselves. The city that has foundations, the spiritual one. The one that really matters. And we begin with the foundation. We begin with his feast, just as we found in the scriptures, when you return to pure worship, often it's through the feast. Being willing to live our convictions, not just talk about them, to the point of self-sacrifice. That's the point that Yahweh wants us each to be. That's the point we have to go. That's the place we have to go if we're hoping to be considered one of his. It's a sacrifice. This whole life is a sacrifice, one way or the other. We sacrifice of ourselves. We don't live for this world. We look for a better world. If you're not prepared to stand for your faith now, to overcome a few everyday trials and inconveniences now, how are you ever going to be in that time? The day you may be called on to choose between your convictions and your life. Revelation 20 shows us that this is the very scenario that looms ahead. Verse 4, and I saw thrones, and they had sat on them, and judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Yahshua and for the word of Yahweh, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with Messiah 1,000 years. What is more important in this life? He that seeks to save his soul shall lose it. He that loses his life for my sake shall find it. I always say, if you die for him, your salvation is assured. Yahweh's looking for a few good people, high positions of priesthood in his kingdom, awaiting the cream of the harvest, those who are willing now to follow the truth. And I believe we are. At least we've shown by our willingness to come out to his feast for 7-8 days, that we're willing now to sacrifice in this way, and we're ready for greater sacrifices to come. That's the motion part of inertia. We're already going that way, we just keep on going. If you were to take a survey of 100 people on the street out here and ask them if they ever heard of the Feast of Tabernacles, we got a sign out there, and I'm sure you saw it as you came in. People wonder, what is that? I'm sure, and I've heard it too. What is that? How many yes responses would you get out of 100, maybe? 3? I don't know. Maybe 1? How many of them that know what it's about are willing to do something about it, rather than just, you know, keep a feast in your backyard and under a tent? You know, it's called a convocation. That means you come together. You can't do that when you're a congregation of one in your backyard in your tent. Can't do it. Oh, it's convenient, but Yahweh wants a sacrifice. He wants us to come out and not just make it easy on ourselves. The whole world is steeped in senseless, pointless holidays. And, you know, to coin a word, the culture is traditioning people to go along with tradition, to keep these holidays for no other reason, but yet it comes on their calendar, so then they keep it. Don't know why. There's no blessings in them. They're clueless. The clueless masses, to keep secular holidays with no other transcendent reason that it's there and everybody else is doing it. That's traditioning. There are no spiritual blessings in it, no command from Yahweh, no promise given in the scriptures like his feast days. And yet, that's what they choose to do, because it's easy, it's convenient. And you got to do something, you know. We once had a fellow come to the feast way years ago, and his wife was so much into Xmas. He said, you don't understand. This is her life. She works all year long for this holiday. You know. And then we stopped in to see him. He's somewhere up in Indiana. Whoa, you ought to see that house. I mean, it's like Santa's playground, you know. I mean, everything was, oh my goodness, decorated to the. He's right. And this wasn't even at Xmas. This was like, what, 2 months before? This is, how senseless, think about it. Where's the blessings in that? And it's one day deal, it's all over, and everybody goes back to, oh, now I got to pay the bills, you know. It's crazy, it's just crazy. But that's the way of the world. And we all know it, we've all been there, I'm sure, in one way or another. And nothing like Tabernacles. It's not a substitute for Tabernacles. It can't even come close to Tabernacles. Feasts like Tabernacles are observed dozens of times in both Testaments, and the world is completely ignorant about them. That's incredible. If there ever were a more incredible state of affairs that we find today, it has to be this. There is zero scriptural evidence for observances that 99% of the people out there observe. That 99%, I'd even wager, that Bible believers observe. And there's no reason for it in the scriptures. Not only that, the days are actually denounced in Yahweh's word, because it's all part of that false worship we have to leave. It's part of that Egypt we have to get out of. People don't understand that because they've been too traditioned to accept it and think that if you don't keep it, what? You don't keep it? You know, they think there's something wrong with you. Why not? You know, the father and son were targets of identity theft millennia ago by the religious establishment, basically the translators, with an agenda to supplant their names and truth with a whole cachet of beliefs and practices that have been followed ever since. And along with that then comes the traditioning to accept what they decided the Bible should say. We spend a lot of our time in this ministry debunking error, showing people the right way, trying to get back in return. That's why we're restoration. We're trying to get back to the truth, restoring the truth once delivered. The fulfillment of 2 Timothy 4:3, spoken 2,000 years ago, has held true for thousands of years. And only the sincere seekers of Yahweh aren't going to be blinded by the sheer magnitude of the contemporary error. It says, "For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears." Or more correctly, having itching ears, they shall heap to themselves teachers, because they want to hear this. They don't want to hear the truth. Why did the early church dispense with the Bible's holy days and start making up their own? Pretty much right after Yahshua left. It was in motion. The apostates were working. Simon Magus and some of these others, the wheels of identity theft began turning to replace the true identity of worship, the name central to that, and other things at the start, from the very start, to derail worship. Paul warned Timothy, 1 Timothy 5:15, that even in his day, some were already turning aside from the truth to follow Hasatan. And then we read of the specific warning in 2 Peter 2:1 about how it's going to be accomplished. But there were false prophets also among the people, even though there were false teachers among you, who privily shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the master that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. The truth of what the Bible teaches is rare. It's very rare. It's like a map to a treasure. You give them the map, the word, the scriptures, to paradise, and you watch as they take off in the complete opposite direction. Even though anyone can clearly read it, understand it, and all they have to do is follow it. Well, you've understood, and you've come out to the feast as part of your true worship. And Yahweh, I know, is very pleased. And the angels in heaven, I'm sure, are rejoicing that there are those right now in this world that's getting more and more corrupt. There are those that are continue to stand for Yahweh. You didn't fight it. You didn't find excuses. Oh, it was inconvenient. Yeah, but big deal. You overcame the obstacles and you learned. You wanted to get here. You proved faithful. And remember this, the world doesn't give a hoot about your spiritual well-being. You learn that if you're going to obey Yahweh, you got to do it. You must be the one to make it happen. You're going to have to take the initiative and take the stand for Yahweh. This is the entire lesson that is presented in Yahweh's word over and over. You read of the patriarchs and the stalwarts of the scriptures. They were the ones that are out there taking the stand. Nobody did it for them. We stand today with Yahshua, the son of Nun, and say, as for me and my family, we're going to serve Yahweh over any other obstacle, over any other human authority on earth. Yahweh is forever. He's the one that matters in our lives. Nothing else is more important than following him. And the record of your choices are being written as well. He's keeping a record of what you do, because we're all going to be rewarded according to our works. That four-letter word that a lot of people hate. Yeah, work, it's important. It's what we do. It shows what's in our heart. What's in our heart comes out in what we do. Philippians 2:12 tells us, "Wherefore, my brethren, as you have always obeyed, not as in my absence only, but now much more in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." So we don't have Yahshua standing with us. But he says, blessed are those that don't see and yet still believe. We don't have Yahshua standing there. We can't ask him the questions. But we have his word. All you need is his word. You follow the command to be here over in Leviticus 23. Speak to the children of Israel, saying, 15th day of the seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to Yahweh. These are the feasts of Yahweh, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations to offer an offering made by fire to Yahweh. You shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before Yahweh or Elohim for 7 days. There again, rejoice. It's a command to rejoice. You shall keep a feast to Yahweh for 7 days of the year, not just two high days, and work the rest of the week. Every day they had to bring a sacrifice. They couldn't just say, okay, we'll come on the high days, but we're going to go back and plow the field the rest of the time. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. Again, not just on the high days. All who are native Israelite shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of Egypt. I am Yahweh your Elohim. He signs off, I am Yahweh your Elohim. That's how important. He's putting his personal signature on that command. Interestingly, the command to rejoice appears for the first time in scriptures in instructions for the Feast of Tabernacles. Isn't that interesting? Deuteronomy 16:15 is even a more forceful phrase in relation to rejoice and the feast. Therefore, you shall surely rejoice. In case you missed it the first time, you shall surely rejoice. I love that. The wording is so strong, you might even be misled into thinking it's to be one big bash. But Yahweh wants us to rejoice with the right purpose, always. So seriously did the Jews in Auschwitz keep the feast with joy that they say they even danced in the concentration camp when the Feast of Tabernacles came around. Why do we put so much emphasis on this feast, people ask us? Well, we already noted in Zechariah 14 where it's key to turning the nations back to Yahweh in the kingdom. Yahweh required 189 animal sacrifices to be made at the Feast of Tabernacles alone, more than any other Moedim in the scriptures. A sacrifice is a freely given offering, and it had to be a good offering, the best of your crop, the best of your animals. It had to be literally a sacrifice. It couldn't just be, oh, I'll just throw in some lame animal or some half-rotted wheat or whatever. No, it had to be the best. So we sacrifice literally as we sacrifice to offer to Yahweh. Yahweh expects even more sacrifice from his people at the Feast of Tabernacles than any other time of the year. Two other feasts are also pilgrim feasts, unleavened bread and Pentecost, where you go. Doesn't work. You can't just walk out the back door and get into your tent. You got to leave the house. You got to go to where Yahweh places his name. And we learn many lessons as we attend the services of the Feast of Tabernacles. But there, of course, are lessons in this feast itself. First of them is taught by our simple coming here in the wilderness. The most stubborn day-to-day trial we all face is to keep this world from getting in the way of fulfilling Yahweh's great purpose. The men of the Bible achieve that, but not without an almost daily challenge. We read about it all the way through the Old Testament. The world's influence also affects us. We carry it everywhere we go, and sometimes we don't even realize it, like Lot. You know, come out of Sodom. I'll get there. You know, Until that angel came, put his hand in his back, and pulled him out of Sodom. You know, sometimes we just need that extra boost because we're too comfortable in this world too often. We all get that way because we get accustomed to things and that's what we're immersed in. And so, we just go along with the flow oftentimes. We got to deal with automatic worldly reflexes. We got to overcome these things. Feast of Tabernacles helps us do that. It literally pulls us out to come before Yahweh. It gives us the lessons and the practice we need to, when we go back live in the world again, but realize we're there, but that's not our final home. 1 Peter 2:11 says to consider ourselves aliens and pilgrims in this world. A pilgrim is a person who's not setting down roots. He's passing through. He's going somewhere else. We're supposed to be like pilgrims, heading for a different kingdom elsewhere, different destination. His life is always in transition. We can't get too comfortable in one state because we've got to move on. Passing through on our way to the inheritance. Hebrews 11:13, he depicts all the patriarchs. You know, it's the great faith chapter, the roll call of all the faithful we read about in the Old Testament. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. They're not in heaven. They haven't got any promises. Yet, they were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims in the earth. But now they desire a better country, a heavenly country, built in Yahweh's kingdom of the heavens. Therefore, Yahweh is not ashamed to be called their Elohim, for he has prepared a city for them. Abraham lived a literal nomadic existence as the father of the faithful. We may not be wandering nomads, although in this feast we're kind of like it, you know, with our temporary dwellings. But in a spiritual sense, we're not at home anywhere yet. This is the second lesson of tabernacles. We have to convocate. James writes in 1:27, pure and undefiled religion before Yahweh and the Father is this: to visit the orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Well, there's two lessons we've learned so far. Come out of the world, as Yahweh commanded during the feast. Don't be at home in the culture of man, so that it becomes your number one reason for living. And the third lesson of booths is that despite their being in the wilderness, Yahweh supplied all of Israel's needs. He fed them. He fed them, supplying all their needs, whether they knew it or not. The temporary dwellings are a token of what Yahweh can do, his care and protection while on our spiritual pilgrimage. Well, I don't want to go any longer, but I want to just encourage you to really get into the feast, really rejoice, really immerse yourself, get involved in the activities, get involved in serving. That's what we're all learning to do, to serve. One day to serve Yahshua in the kingdom forever. So we're learning to serve now. And there's something about serving that comes back on you. You feel, why do people give? Why do people, you know, someone's in dire need and people, you know, give to help? Why? Well, number one, they have a right heart. Number two, it makes them feel good inside to help. Yahweh puts that in us. So we want to give. We want to, serve the brethren. That's basically a basic aspect of what we do as Yahweh's people. So we can practice that at the feast and learn how to serve each other, get the most out of it, and rejoice before Yahweh at his time that he ordained for all of us. May Yahweh bless you.